stand by while NCLA cuts through the noise to signal abuse of administrative power. This is Administrative Static with Mark Chenoweth and John Vecchione.
Welcome to Administrative Static, and Mark and Janine and I are joined by our colleague Greg Dolan to discuss a response in Reed versus JMU, James Madison University. Greg, we haven't talked about this in a while since you won the statute of limitations argument in the Fourth Circuit. Tell us what's going on.
Thanks, John. Good to be back. We are now at a renewed motion to dismiss stage, where the JMU moved to dismiss, essentially arguing that the process that Ms. Reed got was all the process she was entitled to, and this was picture perfect, and there's nothing to see here, and so we should all move along, which of course is nonsense.
Right, and so the way this happens is that what happened first is they moved to dismiss saying we had filed too late, and then the Fourth Circuit said, no, you didn't file too late. And then it comes back down, and the first thing they do is move to dismiss again.
Correct.
And what counts are in it? What is she claiming?
So she's claiming that the procedure against her violated due process in a variety of ways, as well as violated Title IX, as well as several Virginia statutes and Virginia constitutional provisions. But ultimately, it's all about the fact that she was charged and convicted of a activity that was not against a single JMU rule at the time the activity occurred. And that we rejected that approach since the Magna Carta.
Yes, and that's true.
And 800 years and counting.
Older even than Virginia. What's Title IX? Let's remind our listeners what happens here.
So Title IX is a federal law. It's part of the Civil Rights Act that essentially says—
Well, not really. Well, I guess it was added to it in 1972.
Right.
Yeah.
So— but it essentially says that universities or other government entities that receive federal funds cannot discriminate, and not just government, even private entities that receive federal funds cannot discriminate on the basis of sex. Right. And usually that is used in university adjudications when somebody suffers, say, sexual assault, et cetera, and because the university cannot create a hostile work environment for victims of sexual assault, they need to take some steps to make sure that the perpetrators of sexual assault get appropriately segregated, expelled, or other measures taken against them.
Right.
Although it's worth noting, the same thing is true. They're not allowed to make it hostile based on race reasons either, but there are no on-campus race tribunals. If the Civil Rights Act has been violated by someone behaving in a racist way, then you have to go to a real court for that.
Correct. Right. But as Mark pointed out, there are these kind of campus kangaroo courts that, at least right now, actually, post rules promulgated by the former president's administration, they have at least some semblance of due process. There's cross-examination. You actually get to know charges against you.
Before we get there, I just want to bring up, because now that sounds really bad, but she's not accused of sexual assault of any kind or any of that stuff.
Yes. No, correct.
So what happened is—
The weird thing is that—
What happened?
She had an ongoing two-plus-year-long committed relationship with another woman. They lived together in the same house. And that relationship ended as some relationships end. And apparently it was not a pleasant breakup, as happens. But then the university found that this—
I've never heard of this. Unpleasant breakup. So there's
no even allegation of any— And I just want to say, because we hear this in Title IX all the time, Title VII all the time, there's been some sort of non-consensual violence of some sort. This is nothing like
or
that.
Or misconduct.
There was none of that. So the only thing that the university could accuse Ms. Reed of is that apparently at the time the relationship began, she was technically faculty, whereas the other woman was a graduate student. And maybe that was not a good idea. Maybe it was. But the point
but
is,
she wasn't
at
her
the
graduate
time,
student.
She wasn't her graduate student. That's very clear. But more fundamental, that at the time, even if she were her graduate student, That was not against university policies. It only became against university policies after the other woman had graduated and no longer was a graduate student. So either way you look at it, it never kind of – the prohibitory policy and the actual relationships never overlapped.
Right. Not only that, but the university had looked into earlier accusations and had cleared her of any violation. And then there's this subsequent accusation comes in for something she'd already been cleared of. It's a very strange situation.
That, but what's also most kind of galling about this is that what they ultimately convicted her of or found her liable for is what they termed a non-consensual relationship, which is kind of almost ridiculous to think that a two-year relationship with a cohabiting adult would be non-consensual in the absence of any violence or threats. But it also sends a message to the public that this is essentially a sexual predator who engaged in a non-consensual relationship, which is of somebody who is a subordinate, none of which is true, which of course makes it difficult for her to get a job, makes it difficult for her to really move on with her life. And I'm kind of flabbergasted. It has taken university 2+ years, and they're still fighting it, to admit a simple fact that at the time relationships occurred, good idea or bad idea, whether it was smart to date this woman or not, it was not against any policies, and yet they're convicting her of something kind of an
Well, that's why they don't want to get to the merits. They don't want to get to the merits because on the merits, they absolutely clearly lose. So they've got every other argument they're trotting out first.
And that – now I want to get to the process, which – so just – I just want to summarize up to here, as Mark and Greg have said. So she is in a consensual relationship with
someone – I've done a lot of things up to here but never summarized before.
Who's not her student. There's a breakup. The university looks into it, clears her. Then the policy changes at a later date, and then there's an accusation that this was non-consensual that she never sees. We haven't added that she never sees, and even getting the allegations against her was troublesome. So what happens then? So now this new accusation comes after all this stuff has happened. Then what happens?
Right. And then the person at GMU responsible for these sort of investigations essentially sends Ms. Reed an email saying, we have an allegation against you, and so could you please respond to it? And Ms. Reed said, like, well, what is it about? She's like, can't tell you that. So respond to something to this. She's not allowed to call any witnesses. The accuser never shows up at a hearing.
And she's not given the accusation from the accuser.
Right, until the day of.
Right.
The accuser doesn't come at a hearing. You can't cross-examine her.
No confrontation,
there's no cross-examination. There's no kind of way to conclude whether somebody is or is not more or less credible. Also, footnote, before you got up to here, it's also worth pointing out that it is the former student who started the relationship. She's the one who,
right?
I don't want to say forcefully, but she's the one who actually first kissed Ms. Reed.
So, initiated, we'll say.
So, right.
Why in the world did they go after this woman? Is there something we don't?
It's not clear. I think when the relationship ended, the other woman wrote, it was not even a complaint. She just wrote kind of an email here. Like, here's my Title IX statement of stuff that happened. And, and because by that point, the policy was in effect, even though it was no longer applicable to the relationship. I think university felt it needed to do something.
It should have closed the relationship and said this was, not the relationship, closed the investigation, said this is, barred by a statute of limitations.
It should have never even started it.
Well, I agree.
And so they just were digging their heels in.
Yeah. And so.
Correct.
And
you've never heard of a bureaucracy doing that before, have you?
But they'd also changed their policy because of that federal letter, right?
Correct. So there was, over the last several years, there's been kind of a pendulum was swinging back and forth over what universities are supposed to do in these Title IX investigations. So under Obama administration, all due process considerations went out the window. Under the Trump administration, some of them were brought back. Now the Biden administration is considering new rules kind of somewhere in between the old Obama and Trump rules.
But mostly bringing back the old Obama rules. Yeah.
So, and universities, and I kind of, to be honest, I kind of feel for them a little bit because they are on the hook for these billions of dollars of federal funds. And when the federal government says jump, they will say how high because they don't want to risk going through Department of Education investigation. And
they're being whipsawed, for sure. Yeah.
And so I kind of feel for them. But at the same time, sometimes these cases are, it is he said, she said, and sometimes it's not really clear what happened. But in this case, it is very clear what happened. It was a 2-year consensual relationship.
Well, and can I just say, adults. One of the reasons that we are bringing these cases is we want to establish that there's a constitutional floor for the behavior of the universities here. And if we establish that, then they won't get whipsawed anymore by administrations who want to come in and push things below the constitutional floor.
Correct.
You have to have due process. You have to have confrontation. You have to have the ability to cross-examine witnesses. These should be These are constitutional minimums that need to be recognized as such in the Title IX context.
Correct. But as you said, Mark, I think this case probably should have never started because whatever procedural minimums there should be, it doesn't even fit the letter of their own rule.
Yeah, you have to have a rule violation, right?
Right.
You have to be able to say, well, this was our rule. It's clearly stated and you were aware of it.
And if the allegations are true, you would violate and now we're going to investigate.
And now you have failed, fallen below the standard everyone knew. And here it's like it's
well, instead, they excluded her from campus, if I'm remembering correctly, and they said, even though you're the assistant debate coach, you're not even allowed to interview for the head debate coach position that's now open.
Which was essentially promised to her.
Right. Because of this accusation that's pending over something that wasn't even a violation.
And
that's called getting punished before there's even an investigation.
And then, of course, as with all of these things, process is the punishment. And so ultimately, she got kind of the mildest form of punishment. She only got a reprimand.
Well, except that she didn't get to interview for the
But now it's forever in her record. Anytime she applies, she has to say this. And so that's why we're continuing to fight it.
And the fact is, so the government really doesn't want to get to the merits. So, and the thing is, this was filed years ago. And we're just at, and now we're at the dismissal again. So these things
We have a tentatively scheduled trial for May 2025. So that's how long it goes.
All right. And so we've opposed it. What happens next?
So we are going to file today. And the government, I think, has about 2 weeks to reply. And then it's in the judge's hands however quickly she's going to rule. Maybe there will be oral argument. Maybe there will not be. So we'll, that's up to the judge.
Right. And the fact is that some of these arguments were seen before and have been renewed. So perhaps it will be quicker than usual.
Reed v. James Madison University, Western District of Virginia.
Yep. And Greg, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.